This is the Scorebook Live Today podcast, a podcast about high school sports in the state of Washington. I'm Andy Bueller, reporter with Scorebook Live, and on the phone I've got fellow reporter, SB Live's own Todd Millis. The Gridiron Classic is upon us. Todd, first off, how you doing? And can you believe we've finally reached the end of the season?
We've survived, man. I think we've survived to get to this point. And it's going to be a completely different weekend, covering doubleheaders at three different spots. But I'm interested to see what it's all about and how it plays out.
Certainly. The way it works is we have three games all outdoors in the first year outside of the Tacoma Dome. Two classifications are paired up at each of those sites at noon and four games. We've got previews up on scorebooklive.com/Washington with all the details you need to know and need to watch for, including how to watch the games, how to follow along. You can always follow along on our Scorebook Live app with live updates throughout the game. But we're going to break down each classification, each state championship game to start. So we're going to start with 4A. Let's just jump into it. Camas is back in the state title game for the first time since 2016 when the Papermakers won it with Jack Coletto back then. They take on Bothell, who's come on strong late in the season, particularly this postseason. Todd, you wrote up the preview for that game. What stands out to you about this game, and is it Camas's to lose?
Well, I think Camas comes into this game with the fewest amount of question marks, the fewest dents in the armor, so to speak. Haven't lost a game. Their closest game was Skyview, but they've handled some of the better teams around the state out of conference too. Lincoln, Bellevue, really impressed with the way they handled Mount Si last week. And I think we all talk about where it starts and usually ends for them, and that's up front. And you've talked about it. John Eagles talked about it. Their offensive line coach has talked about it. They have a fantastic offensive line. Very well could be the best, not only in the state, but, as good an offensive line as we've seen in some time. And so you can do a lot of different things with that. You can run, power. And I know you've seen that rotation of running backs they do. You can go play action. They have a deep threat in Jackson Clemmer. I mean, they can do so many things when it starts up front with a physical, smart offensive line. And then you can speak more to this, Andy. Defensively, they're no slouch either. I mean, I think they played some of their best ball here in the playoffs. But I want to take a look at Bothell because I think a lot of people look at this as they're sort of the Cinderella team that's gone through the playoffs. And, they've lost the two games. But their two losses, I mean, you look at who they lost to. They lost at Kennedy Catholic in a game that wasn't real competitive in the second half. And they've lost a real close game to O'Day. Now look at some of the offensive lines that front seven of Bothell's has faced. They faced O'Day. They faced Kennedy Catholic. The last 2 weeks alone, they faced a really good offensive line in Graham Kapausen. Last week, Woodinville, we all know Levi Rogers going to Stanford. And this is a front seven that's been able to create havoc. And I talked to Tom Boehner a little bit. He's really, really excited about the way his front seven has been active. And they have a guy that I think people need to pay attention to. His name's Gabe Johnson. They move him around. He usually plays strong side defensive end. He's active. He started last year as a sophomore. He just really gets after it. He just makes things happen in the backfield. Elijah Vatogo, he's a two-way all-league guy, kind of a plug in the middle. So they've got a great defensive end, and Gabe Johnson, he started since his sophomore year. He just makes things happen in the backfield, gets to the quarterback. A two-way alignment, and Elijah Vatogo plays in the middle, a good plug against the run. But they're linebackers. And these are guys that have been doing it all year. And Tom, like I said, Tom thinks that this front seven right now, over the last month, has played at a high level as any front seven he's had in his time at Bothell. And you talk about these linebackers, Ryan Metz, Colin Fisherkiller, really good middle inside linebackers, they've been both really good at not only causing turnovers, but getting a hold of opposing running backs. You know, and then they've got Blake Bickhaus, an outside guy who makes things happen from sideline to sideline. Their front seven is no joke. I think that because they have the two losses, I think people think that there are people around the state that think, well, geez, you know, Camas can't, if they can't beat a two loss team, that there's something wrong. I think this is a really good Bothell team. They play in a really good conference. I think Camas is going to win the football game, but I think this has the makings of a really competitive, good football game that's going to take four quarters to decide. As we all know, Bothell's the last team to beat Camas last year by a point in the district round. These are two very good, accomplished coaches. You know, I don't know if it was the two teams that everybody thought would be in it to start the year, but, you know, I look at this, at the way that both of these teams are playing right now, and they're both playing at a pretty high level.
No question. I'll be there to cover it at Mount Tahoma at 4 p.m. At the 3A level, this has been the game that people have been waiting for since the beginning of the season. I mean, these two teams, Eastside Catholic and O'Day, were the favorites at 1-2 going into the year. The rivalry between the two, I mean, they played in last year's state championship game. Eastside Catholic won that handily, 31-13. But this rivalry, I mean, not to discount the season some other 3A teams had. Lincoln comes to mind, made a great run, full of athletes, had a great season. But week six, there was some gasoline thrown on this rivalry when O'Day went to Eastside Catholic, and you and I were there, and shut him down, controlled the game, and really definitively beat what could be the most talented team in state history, top to bottom, in Eastside Catholic. So I'm really excited for this game. Todd, you're going to be there. Big question marks, O'Day, Cam Daniels, starting running back throughout the season. He's had a phenomenal season, you know, great athlete. The status of him is unknown. He missed last week against Lincoln due to Kennewick. Duh. He missed that game due to injuries, and in typical O'Day form, Keyson Mika stepped up, 28 rushes, 211 yards, 3 touchdowns, just plug and play. So status of Daniels is unknown. My attempts to reach Imani Kohler today were unsuccessful, so by the time this podcast comes out, maybe that'll change. But we don't know what the status of Cam Daniels is. I still anticipate this to be a really, really good game, and we'll see. I mean, you were at Eastside Catholic's game last week, Todd. They won definitively against a really talented Lincoln team.
I was really impressed. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was really impressed with the way, you know, as we both know, we were at that O'Day game, Eastside Catholic game, and it took something. It seemed, even from the outside and talking to people that know the program, it took a few weeks. It was a gut punch to those guys. They hadn't lost to an in-state team in a while. I think they had to kind of regroup and find themselves a little bit and sort of, you know, maybe put the flash aside, maybe put, you know, they like the loud music. You know, that's a team full of stars. And I think they finally come together in this postseason. I was really, really impressed with the way, I mean, Lincoln ran the ball 52 times against them last week. And, jeez, yeah, Lincoln had over 200 yards. But if you look at the breakdown, it was 4 yards a carry. They did enough against the Lincoln running attack, you know, that full house backfield that the Aves had gone to here a month ago or so. And I thought they did a really good job against two really good running backs in Abner Cio and Julian Simon. I was really impressed with their physicality on both sides of the ball. And I'll tell you something right now. They have a true leader in a first-year quarterback, the transfer from Hawaii, and Kobe Musau. He's been accurate. They're starting to let him run on more designed runs because of his physicality. That's what he did in Hawaii. That was the kind of style he played at Punahou. And I just think he's kind of the glue star guy on offense that really kind of is the engine of it. And he did a great job. I thought they did a great job of distributing the ball equally around to all their good players. JT Tuamalo is now playing tight end a little bit, and he is, he is a guy. He is a tough guy to bring down. But G. Scott Jr. Sam Adams, Gio Orsino did a great job of sort of evenly distributed, you know, distributing the ball in the first half, and then they found something with Orsino in the second half as a matchup nightmare, and thought they did a really good job kind of feeding him, making him the guy, the focal point of the offense, and kind of wearing Lincoln down. I think this is a team that's found its focus again. I think it's found its purpose again. I think the last couple weeks they've played pretty well. You know, Dom Dosty is he's been really, really impressed with the way his guys have sort of regrouped and started to play with that purpose and that physicality it takes to go win a state championship against a disciplined, physical team like O'Day. And the rematch is going to be fun. Right now, my money's on Eastside Catholic. I'm going to pick them by at least a touchdown in the game.
Yeah, I have in our breakdown is about to publish on scorebooklive.com/Washington. I've got Eastside Catholic by a touchdown. I've got it 28-21. This isn't going to be the blowout that it was, or, you know, not necessarily a blowout, but this isn't going to be the commanding Eastside Catholic win that it was last season, I don't think. So, really looking forward to that one. Todd, you are going to be there. That's going to be at Sparks Stadium in Puyallup. So moving on to 2A, another game that you will also see. This is going to be, we were talking about this before we started recording. Root Sports is televising 3A and 2A this year because it can only be at one site. And they picked a good year to televise 2A for the first time. This is a dominant Tumwater team is going to take on Steilacoom, which is playing for its first state championship in program history, they're playing their best football of the season.
Two teams that don't play in the same league, they've seen each other often over the past 3 years. They've played three times over the past 2 years, and then in the off season they had a home and home scrimmage. I think A, because these two coaching staffs get along, but B, you know, if you're Bill Beatty, you want your defense to see a team that passes the ball in a prolific manner like Steilacoom with an elite five-star athlete in Emeka Ibuka on the outside. And if you're Steilacoom, you want to see the physicality of the wing tee and what it will take for your front seven to neutralize or keep up or, you know, defend it. So this is a game I think it's all about the styles. You're right. Tumwater's putting together one of the most dominant 2A seasons in state history. 8 of their last 9 games, they've put their opponents on running clock, including every opponent here in the postseason.
How crazy is that? I mean, I know that, you know, Hawkinson obviously was missing its two best players, but geez, I mean, to running clock Hawkinson in a state semifinal game.
To tell you that there's a lot of things that have gone Tumwater's way, the turnovers, the penalties, just the momentum things that can turn what we see as a close matchup on paper into a 28-0 lead. And then, as we know, this is high school football, so, you know, sometimes kids don't respond well when they're down 28-0 or quite frankly, when they're up 28-0. So a lot of things have gone Tumwater's way, but Tumwater's also created a lot of this with, I mean, it has. If it's not the best defensive line in 2A, I don't know what it is. But it's a team, it's a defense that has 120 tackles for loss in 13 games. Think about that. They don't have a lot of sacks, but they create a lot of pressure. And I think, they faced two pretty good quarterbacks the past 2 weeks, including Levi Crum. And Levi, you know, struggled against that defensive line as well last week. It's going to be interesting to see how Chance McDonald in the quick passing game and getting the ball out of his hands, what their approach is against this front seven, because I think that's the matchup. If Chance McDonald can get the ball off and not take negative plays, I think Steilacoom wins on the outside. You look at their receivers with Brady and Ekbuka and their two running backs that come on. But it's easier said than done. That Tumwater defensive front has controlled everybody it's faced this year. To me, that's the matchup of the game. If Stillicum can find success in getting the ball out quickly, I think this has a chance to be a pretty good high-scoring state championship game.
No question. Like I said, Todd, you're going to be there to follow you. I will be from the sidelines following you, your updates from that game. You can also watch it on TV, which is nice if you don't want to brave the cold of these outdoor games. On to 1A. Todd, you were out at Royal yesterday as we're recording this, hanging out with Wiley Allred and the Royal Knights, who have been just dominant this year. They take on who we can now safely say was a team that was seeded way too low in 7-seed Linden Christian, just a really deep team that's just been really strong and tough in this postseason. But are they going to have what it takes to take down just the behemoth that is Royal?
I think this is the one team that, with its size, with its ability, this misdirection, its speed to get to the outside, and its deep play ability, its deep play threat. This is the one team that I think can stay up with Royal. Royal is fantastic. You're right. I got to drive over there, brave the cold. You know, it was in the low 20s for their early evening night practice with Wiley Allred, and thanks to those guys for letting me hang out in their, in their film study room and go out to practice. And I'm going to do something on them this week. But it's funny being in a room with a team that has had as much success as Royal is to me a fascinating thing. It's a fascinating dynamic. Their ability to kind of laugh at themselves. You know, they put on the Connell tape and some of the bonehead plays, they kind of laughed at themselves. They got up and applauded, you know, quarterback Caleb Christensen, who's a rising junior. He was able to draw the defense offsides, and it drew a standing ovation in the film room. It's kind of cool to see. I just think they have a really good balance in what they're doing. They don't get too high. They don't get too low. They don't talk about the Colville loss last year that ended their long winning streak. This is a team that knows how to go about its business in the film room, on the practice field. They have a distinct strategy against this Linden Christian team. I think you're going to see Caleb Christensen with his fast hips and his quick arm. I think he's going to really test the middle of the field down the seams with a very talented receiving core. You know, led by Cooper Christensen, who's a big target. And then I think they're going to let their running back just kind of control the game after that. He's a guy that doesn't mind the contact. He's a wrestler. That's Lorenzo Myrick. And oh, by the way, Linden Christian's got to find a way to move the ball on that defense. It's disciplined and it's aggressive. It's the perfect blend of that. And they got a guy in the inside of that defense named Michael Perez. I was watching their film review. It was like watching Reggie White. That's how disruptive he was. He was pushing basically two linemen right into the quarterback on almost every play. When you have one of those guys that control the middle of the line of scrimmage like that, I mean, what do you do as an offense? But I think Linden Christian has the size to deal with that. You know, they've got the versatility in both of their quarterbacks. You know, they got Trajan Schouten, and they've got Logan Dykstra, who's more of the running quarterback. Both of them have different skill sets, but in what Linden Christian wants to do, run the ball inside to set up the deep ball. I think both of them are good fits in that offense. They're disciplined. They have the athletes to match Royal. I think it's going to be a really good game. You talk to the Royal people; they felt like after they watched them play LaSalle and they watched them really control Deer Park last week in a close game, that this was the best team in the state. I talked to other coaches around the state. I think they felt these were the two best teams in the state. So it's good to get a 1A championship game with two teams playing well, two teams that come from good districts, good leagues, facing off for the championship.
No question. Give me a score prediction real quick.
I got Royal 31-20, but it wouldn't surprise me if this is a lower scoring game. I think that's what Linden Christian wants, with their big pieces and their ability to run, and they're going to continue to run in the middle and continue to run in the middle. They don't mind getting three, 4 yards a pop and just long drives and things like that until they can kind of score a big play. So it wouldn't surprise me if it's a lower scoring, closer game.
What I gleaned from your analysis and your breakdown of Royal talking about the film study is the more coaches who let us into film breakdown sessions, the better. I mean, that's just such a good way to understand a team and to transition into 2B. I was at Kalama's film session yesterday. Shout out to head coach Sean McDonald, who was really great to deal with yesterday and really welcoming into their breakdown of their win, their overtime dramatic win over Napavine last week. And the 2B state championship, I mean, you have Onalaska and Napavine have been the 1-2 all year. And you know, it's felt like they were going to meet again since they met early in the year in this state championship. And Kalama, which picked up a couple losses early in the season, still kind of it took them a few weeks to really figure out how to play with each other. They put it together this postseason. They're a big play team. They'll tell you, they'll be the first to tell you that. And Brennan Vance is probably the best receiver in the state at that level. He's had, you know, had an 83-yard touchdown return last week against Napavine. He caught the final touchdown pass and the ensuing 2-point conversion, which put Kalama in position to win. And you have a quarterback in Jackson Asseri, who's a sophomore, good athlete, really smart kid, whip smart, 4.0 student. McDonald said that he's just been really eager to learn. Was kind of in, you know, put in a pretty tough position in the beginning of the season, stepping in, you know, out of position as a wide receiver last year. He started, and so, you know, certainly a reliable athlete, but he's kind of really played into his own and developed, especially developed, you know, trust with his receivers and with their big playmakers. And Vance said as much yesterday. He's just like, you know, I went into practice, or, you know, I basically was just like, can this guy give me the ball? And throughout the season, you know, he said that the biggest part of developing trust with his quarterback is just seeing it happen and continuing to make plays. It's just, you know, you kind of believe it when you see it. And they've made some big plays this postseason, especially last week. But Kalama themselves said yesterday in film, you know, they've got to really be sharp against an Ani team that's really big and just runs the ball a ton. You know, and Todd, you were out and you saw him play this year. Ashton Haight, the running back, you know, an all-state fullback from last year, he's their workhorse. He's the guy who carries the ball 30-plus times a game. Is Kalama going to have to slow him, not stop him, but just slow him to even kind of stay in this game?
Yeah, I think there's this kind of school of thought about passing teams that play extreme run teams, that because you're an extreme run team, you practice against that every week. So, therefore, the Onalaska secondary is the place to attack. And that would obviously feed right into Kalama's hands with the two guys that you mentioned and a couple other pass catchers as well. The thing is, the two pass teams that have faced them, Tri-City Prep and Napavine, and then Rainier too a little bit, they might have found out some success, but not a whole lot of great success. Cade Lawrence is a really good defensive back. He patrols the back end of that Ani defense pretty well. I think Kalama is going to get a few big plays, but at the end of the day, what you hear about facing Onalaska's triple option and Alex Frazier, that big offensive line they have, is you feel it when you play Onalaska. You feel it after the game. You feel it in the days after the game. You're sore, you're bruised. This is a bruising football team to face. Ashton Haight, I don't know. Nobody's been able to stop him in 2 years. I don't think Kalama's going to stop Ashton Haight. The question is, can they stop the other guys? You know, they got a good quarterback in Lucas Krager. I know he was dinged up after last week, so his status is unknown at this time. He's a guy that can break it and take it to the house at any time when defenses are geared to stop Ashton. I just think Ashton's going to get his behind that physical offensive line. The question is, can Kalama win a shortened game like that? Because Ani's going to control the clock. They've done it against every team that they faced all season, and they really haven't had a whole lot of resistance except, you know, a tough Adna game at Adna. and Napa Vine in the first half. I just think this is Ani's time. And Klamath had a great run being the two-time defending state champs, but Onalaska has been the best team from the summer on. You talk to coaches throughout the state. This was the team that was the favorite. I think Onalaska finds a way with that bruising triple option. And I think that their defense, especially their pass defense, has been underrated. I don't think it's gotten the credit maybe it's deserved for most of the season.
I have Onalaska by a couple touchdowns. I haven't made an official score pick, but that's kind of the gist of it. So moving on to 1B. This is our final game. I'll be at this game. Just released a story on the website on a little bit deeper look at Odessa and what winning this game against Nacelle will mean for the community of Odessa really kind of took a peek behind the curtain of a program that is the most dominant in the state by far this year. It's not even close. They could be one of the best 1B teams, 8-man teams of all time. Bring back all but three starters from last year and have really ran away from every team and are really blowing teams out here in the postseason. They play an ACL team that's in its first state championship in program history. So, and Jeff Eaton's been there 26 years. Nacelle's got a lot of weapons, including, I hope I'm not butchering his name, but Faso Tatu. He had four touchdowns in the second half last week as the Comets pulled away from ACH. They've got Ethan Lindstrom, a dual threat quarterback. This is a talented Nacelle team, and let's give credit to them for taking down, really asserting himself. I think this was kind of a West versus East thing a little bit last week, too, is the fact that, this undefeated Nacelle team, it's their best record since, around 2011. Getting to this stage is a really big deal for them. So give credit where credit's due. However, I think, Odessa's season of outright dominance, I just don't see it. I just don't see it ending. I see, a big Odessa win.
Yeah, I think we're not betting men, but if I had to, go over to my mom and place a wager for a Coca-Cola on the game that would have the widest margin of victory, I think this is the safest bet on the board. I agree with you. There's nothing I think that's going to stop this Odessa team. Maybe the best B8 football team in state history. I've watched those lacrosse Washtenaw teams 15 years ago, and they were fantastic. But this team has just been outright silly dominant. I don't see that changing this week. They've destroyed everything that has been put in front of them. And if they play for four quarters in a state championship game, who knows how many points they're going to put up this week. So you like B8 football. This will be a fun game to watch just to go out watch one of the most dominant teams in state history.
Yeah, that's a fun kind of duo with the 4A game back-to-back there. So looking forward to covering both of those and enjoyed getting to know, some of the families on that Odessa team. So go check out that story on scorebooklove.com/Washington. Just before we take a break and after the break, Dan Dickow, our colleague at Scorebook Live, he talks to Lyndon Christian's Roger DeBoer. He talks to Zilla's Mario Mangiarelli. So two good interviews after the break. But before we part ways with you, the Gridiron Classic is outdoors this year, as we mentioned at the top. If you didn't know that, if you forgot or missed it back in, I believe it was September when it was announced, maybe late August, a new look for this event. So there's been a ton of impassioned commentary online. I know that's not always reflective of what everyone thinks, but Todd, do you think that the Gridiron Classic is going to continue to be outdoors after 2020? I know you said you were going to put me on the spot, and feel free to. But what do you make of, now that we're just a couple days away from this Gridiron Classic, what do you make of this move?
Yeah, we've talked about this on previous podcasts. I'm interested to see what this weekend looks like. I want to see how these sites are treated as a state championship venue. If it's gone through some subtle or obvious transformations to make it more of a state championship destination type site. I mean, it's never going to be the Tacoma Dome. It's in a high school stadium, all three of them. So I'm not trying to compare the two. But I want to give it a chance. After this week, it'll be interesting. Like I said, they'll gather a lot of information. I know the forecast is mid-40s and drizzle. I'm interested to see how that impacts attendance. Let me remind folks, last year in the Tacoma Dome, it was just over 12,000 people went to the Tacoma Dome for six games. And I understand that people talk about it as being a destination point, but 12,000 people. I covered this event when it was well over 20,000 people. That's how much this has been, that's how much this event has declined in attendance over the last few years. With that being said, I think it's going to be, this is going to be something that we're going to see for at least a year, a couple years. But I don't think it's going to be off the table trying to, negotiate, try and find a way to get this back to a destination point site like, we talk about CenturyLink Field, the home of the Seahawks. Maybe they look at T-Mobile Park. They've had a couple football games there. It has a closed roof. I know Husky Stadium's kind of thrown out there. I don't like that idea. I like the fact that the two professional stadiums with their community outreach program, the Seahawks, always seem to have their finger on the pulse of what's going on in their community, especially in college football and high school football. I think this is what we're going to see for the next couple of years. After that, I think everything but the Tacoma Dome will be on the table. It'll be interesting to see what the WIA's next move would be, whether they keep it out here long term or they look at moving it back to a one site for all six games, which I think a large part of the state would be in favor of.
The WIA is in preliminary discussions with the University of Washington and the Seahawks. Hey, Todd, you stay with us for 30 minutes. You're going to get some good news nuggets in here. But I think that, what they call premier locations is one of these big stadiums. The WIA, they hear everyone's complaints. They understand. They understand the importance of having a game like this, at a big stadium. But, like you said, when the attendance keeps going down, ticket prices keep going up, and they continue to kind of lose money on these events, it's put them in a bad place. It's forced the event to go outside this year. So I don't know. I'm not willing to – I just don't think we know enough right now to kind of make a prediction on where this will be next year. I know that in order to have it with the Seahawks, with UW, those are high cost rental, the rental costs are really high. And so, the WIA says it's really going to be what, those stadiums are willing to work out with them. I know the Seahawks, there's concern that since they play on Sundays, there's concern about not being able to house all six games, which I'm sure would be the WIA's first choice. So we'll see what happens. I know I talked to a coach last night, not a football coach, but he was just saying, I basically, if it came down to it and it was cold, he wasn't going to drive up. I was just down in the Vancouver area. Yeah, he wouldn't drive up, wouldn't make a trip to this game. So we'll see what the attendance is this week, but certainly a news story that we're going to continue to follow after this first kind of test run at these three sites.
Absolutely. I mean, it's harder to put Spark Stadium on a t-shirt as opposed to Road to the Dome.
So, hey, listen, I would buy that t-shirt.
Road to Spark Stadium, Road to Mount Tahoma Stadium. Oh, yeah. Hey, it might be a collector's item someday if this is a short-lived endeavor by the WIA.
Just give me a map of Pierce County and throw it on a t-shirt and throw a graphic of the state championship trophy on top of it, and you'll see me wearing it. I don't know why the WI is not hiring me for graphic design.
We're in the wrong business, man.
That's a golden.
We're in the wrong business. We could make a gold mine just selling T-shirts with Pierce County logos and Pierce County maps and stars on all three high school sites. I think we might be onto a moneymaker venture. So I think I'm going to go to my boss and ask for a raise immediately.
So stay with us after the break. We're going to part ways with you. When we come back, Dan Dickow talks to Lyndon Christian's Roger DeBoer and Mario Mangiarelli of Zilla, two great basketball coaches at the 1A level. Stay with us.
Why Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch.
Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live, Washington, on the phone with Lyndon Christian head coach Roger DeBoer. Looking forward to another season, another probably successful season up in the northwest corner of the state, but it's going to be successful in different ways, and a lot of it is because four starters have graduated, three of which are playing at the college level, so it's almost like a reset for the program. But you mentioned to me, Roger, you're excited for it. You think the program has a solid foundation, and you're looking forward to seeing what these kids in new roles have to offer. So as the season is kicked off, you're probably 7-8 practices in. Tell me how things are looking.
You know, thanks for asking. And also, thank you, Scorebook Live. You guys do a wonderful job. Love following you and what you do for high school sports. It's great in our state, and we really appreciate you guys. You know, it's been a an interesting offseason. Obviously, when you graduate, the number of kids, the number of starters that we did, but you know, excitement is probably the perfect word, Dan. We are really excited. You know, we've had a number of kids that did get some varsity time last year that basically have been waiting their turn. They're super excited and ready to jump in and see what happens. You know, Coach Roper from Lyndon and I talk about this all the time, and we're very blessed to be in the community that we are in. And part of that blessing is that, you know, that the tradition continues and kids know that it's their turn and want to be part of something big. And that's kind of where we're at. We had a pretty good summer, and now it's just time to, you know, start building. You know, we're inexperienced in a lot of ways and fairly young, but at the same time, you know, these kids have waited a long time for them to be the men, per se, and so now we're excited for them to see what can happen.
You know, many times at the high school level, for a smaller school like yours, you're going to have multi-sport athletes, guys that played football, basketball, baseball. And at times, if one program is having a lot of success, it tends to have some rescheduling or some reorganizing for the other programs. Now, you guys are having a successful football season as an athletic department, and so you're kind of getting some guys late into the mix. How are you working through practice? What is the excitement around the football team at the school right now?
Well, that's the first and foremost. We are so pumped for our football guys. I mean, that is so cool to be able to have, you know, be at a school where you can succeed in multiple sports. And, you know, we are very committed as coaches across the board that we want to share our athletes. There's nothing more concerning than specialists when you're at a small school. And so we highly encourage you to try to work together with our summer schedules and things like that. But, you know, we're sitting with only three varsity players practicing right now. And I think there's a total of, 15 or 16 kids right now playing football. And we're excited about that. Now, it makes practice a little awkward. And it's a difficult, especially with three varsity kids there as a freshman. It is what do we do? How do we do it? I would say that there's been enough three-man weave shooting drills and one-on-one being played by those three guys. I think they're probably pretty sick of it by now. But at the same time, you know, there's not three bigger fans than those guys, you know, sitting in the middle of the cheering section come football day. You know, we'll get a late start and we'll be, you know, a little bit behind everybody else. But at the same time, that's a very small price to pay to be able to have these athletes have a great experience at more than just basketball or more than just football. I think we have like 9 kids that are three-sport athletes and all but a couple play at least 2 sports. And we just have to have that at our school to be successful. And we want to have that because kids need those types of experiences.
I completely agree in the fact that the kids need those experience. But when you're taught how to compete and how to win in one sport, it kind of bleeds over and translates to success many times in another sport. But the next thing I wanted to ask you, Coach, was you've coached a lot of really good players over the years. But there was a player last year that graduated that kind of caught my eye, that caught a lot of other coaches' eyes across the state, who's now playing at University of Michigan. Cole Badgema is a player that was multi-skilled, very versatile. How do you replace him this season? But then also, you know, talk about him as a kid and what he how fun he was to coach.
Well, yeah, let's start with that. You know, Cole, and I emphasized this so many times last year as well. You know, first and foremost, Cole is just a wonderful young man, a great teammate, somebody that the staff and the other players wanted to cheer for. And I think the number one word that comes to mind is humility. He was a kid that you wouldn't know if he had 6 or 36 on a night. He was the same kid all the time, and that's a special gift. I mean, sometimes when the good Lord blesses you with a lot of talent, sometimes it goes to your head and you may treat people differently and all that. You would never know that with Cole. He was incredibly blessed with a ton of skill. I truly believe that he's going to be a big impact player in the Big Ten. It won't happen early. He's in a really slight body, and you know, maybe take a little bit of time for him to get there. I know he's been getting some limited minutes as a freshman, but he does, and he's got a lot of skill and a lot of talent. He can, you know, he's 6'8", and he can, you know, run the one or run the two or run the three. He can do a lot of things. But, you know, the thing that will always stand out about Cole for us as a staff will definitely be the great young man and great teammate that he was on top of being super talented.
Yeah, I've heard very similar attributes being talked about him, so must have been a joy to coach. But obviously you've got a new team. You're figuring things out and who's going to slide into different roles this season. A guy from your squad that caught my eye this summer over the WIBCA showcase at Bellevue Community College as a tremendous shooter was Andrew DeVries. Talk a little bit about his growth as a player and what you're hoping to see from him this season.
Yeah, speaking of great young man, another great young man, a solid teammate, a guy that actually has gotten a lot of playing time for us ever since the record. You're right, he can absolutely load it. And it's no secret to our league, he'll graduate as one of the best shooters our conference has ever had. And the fun part of it is he'll shatter every 3-point record. I'm a Christian fan, and we've obviously had some great 3-point shooters over the years, and obviously a history deep program. Pretty excited for him, and he's got such an efficient release, and we're excited. He's already made his college commitment to Dort University in the Midwest. So, yeah, we're excited for Andrew. And there's other kids, too. You know, we've had some really great guard play. Our depth is really good. We're probably a team that's going to have to rely on each other a lot more. What I mean by that is that there's going to be a lot of balanced scoring. We've got some great football kids coming that are just tough athletes. We just have a toughness about them that helps make everybody else better. It'll be one of the better shooting teams I've coached. We've coached some really good ones. This one will rank up there. We've got other guys like Bryce Pound and the Jaden DeBoer and some other kids, and our bigs can even shoot. I mean, all nine guys that we will rotate can all shoot the three, and so it makes us a lot more wide open. We're going to chuck it, and we're going to have fun, and we're going to play up tempo, and there'll be some nights that might be a little bit of a struggle, but there's going to be some nights where it's going to be a lot of fun, and we will be completely different than we were the last couple of years. And with that comes excitement and anticipation, and at the same time, for the coaching staff, it comes with some, some angst of, you know, what is this going to look like? But, we got a lot of guys that are excited, a lot of excitement about stepping up, and we're just going to have to see what happens.
As a basketball fan or, you know, a coach, it's always fun to see transition of players, teams, and programs from year to year or over multi-year stretches. But one of the things that I think has been really unique to watch now in a different way because I'm in my role with Scorebook Live is the connection between Lyndon Christian and Lyndon. Up in the northwest corner of the state, it's kind of a smaller community. But you've got these two schools that are very dominant at their levels. How does that happen, and how do you guys support each other as programs?
Well, first and foremost, Coach Roper, I consider a dear friend, one of my closest friends. And, you know, in a culture where it used to be, I mean, when I played here back in the early 80s, you know, there probably wasn't the same spirit of cooperation, I'll call it, between the two schools. I think the rivalry was a little bit more heated at that point. Now I would call it a much more friendly rivalry, where we, because we're in two different classifications, we can cheer for each other on every night except the night that we play each other, right? And so that makes it kind of fun. So, you know, through that friendship, obviously our programs, I think, have become closer together. But the number one thing that stands out for me is just community support. Right, I mean, you've got a community that loves its basketball. I mean, like, crazy loves its basketball. And so with that, you know, the youth programs, you know, basically run and generate themselves. They're often coached by dads who used to be in the programs, and that's for Linden and Linden Christian. Let's not mention the girls' basketball here. It's fantastic, too. I mean, we're going to have two teams that are probably both ranked in the top five in the girls' basketball as well. So it's a history-rich and a tradition-rich community in and of itself, and people just love the game here. And but, you know, our other teams have done well as well. So I think a lot of it is just the fact that, you know, the Dutch culture has produced a lot of good athletes. We got a lot of third and fourth generation kids. You know, people stay. You know, the thing with Linden Christian, which makes it so different than a normal private school, is that we rarely would let them share athletes. Meaning, like, of our top 15 kids this year, 14 of them entered at Linden Christian, one of our feeder schools, when they were in preschool. And the 15th went when he was in third grade. So we're kind of like our own little school district, right? We don't get kids to move in very often and all that. And Linden's the same thing. It's really odd where usually Linden Christian families continue to send their kids to Linden Christian, and Linden families continue to send their kids to Linden. And there's a lot of overlap of friendships. And sometimes we kind of intermarrying, you know, like a Linden person marrying a Christian person, like, where are they going to send your kids? It's actually kind of fun, right? But the community is incredible up here, and you can see that when you go to a tournament, you see a whole half of a dome stadium filled up with people from Linden supporting each other. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, that is that sounds like something that the community's obviously got behind. And you know, this being Thanksgiving week and maybe the most fun week outside of March Madness for a basketball fan, I want to let you get going and get back to, you know, preparing for your team's practices and watching some of the college basketball games. But last question, as a coach and as a fan of the game during this week, when you have a chance to watch a lot of really good college basketball, what do you look for when you're watching the games?
Wow. Loaded question. That is awesome, because so often I just try to be a fan, and most of the time I can be, and unfortunately I'm married to a woman that loves hoops as well. I mean, I'll come home for practice and go, oh my gosh, North Carolina game is incredible. You should have watched that. So we have basketball on a lot. And this weekend, I mean, next to March Madness, Dan, this is cool. Every tournament starts at a different time, and games all over the place. And what will happen is, you know, you become a coach once in a while. You'll see a defensive scheme, or you'll see a great out-of-bounds play, or a great set, or a press break maybe different than what you've seen before. And we instantly stop and rewind. And having two sons in the program now in high school playing, you know, it's fun for us. We're like, oh, Dad, did you see that? Let's rewind it. And so you put on your coach hat every once in a while, take some notes, and, you know, we're an imitation business, right? We don't. There isn't a lot of things that we haven't stolen from other people. We can make up a few, but usually it's something we stole from somebody else. And so, you know, I put on my thief hat a little bit and try to steal some good stuff while I watch and be entertained over the Thanksgiving weekend.
Awesome. Well, Coach, we appreciate the time. I hope you find something to steal while you're watching hoops this week. Have a great Thanksgiving, and Scorebook Live looks forward to following you guys throughout the season.
Well, thanks very much. And again, thanks for everything you guys do. I know the Linden community appreciates you greatly, but I know the state as a whole, there's a big buzz about Scorebook Live and you know, your guys' ability to follow preps and keep us interested and really cool stories and all that. So keep up the great work, and we'll be following you guys as well.
All right. Have a great Thanksgiving, Coach. Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live, here with Zilla head coach Mario Mengarelli. Heading into his fourth year with the Leopards, he has continued a tradition of a successful basketball program in the Yakima Valley area. First off, thanks for joining Scorebook Live and myself to talk about high school hoops to talk about the Zilla Leopards. How has the first week and a half or so of practice treated you?
It's been fun. It was kind of a surprise. Our football program is usually pretty good, so I never know when my guys are going to show up. So that kind of affects making the practice plans, but it's been nice having my guys, and I think we're off to a great start.
You mentioned your football program is at the school is continuing on in the playoffs, but you know, that's something that I always really appreciate and love about small school high school sports is the fact that you have many multiple sport athletes. How do you balance you know, getting your team ready early in the season versus the long-term goals, as well as balancing then getting back your football players into the swing of things with basketball?
So I kind of think that basketball is a long season, so I don't put too much stress on starting off with our best foot. I'd rather be playing really good basketball at the end of February, and that's a long ways away. So I like my guys to play football. I know some, everybody's different, but some kids, if they want to play ball, then I highly encourage them to play it. But no, I just think over the duration of the season, we'll find our good basketball. So I'm not too worried about playing good early.
You talked about wanting to peak at the right time of the season. And for you guys being in the Yakima Valley area, you guys have maybe a hidden advantage in the fact that if you qualify for the state tournament, like you guys have many times in the past, it's right in your backyard at the Yakima Sun Dome, only about 20 minutes or so from Zilla's hometown. What does that mean to you as a coach and as a program? Are you able to kind of use that as an emphasis point in building your culture throughout the year of trying to get there?
I'm not for sure if it is an advantage, but I do everything I do to convince my kids it's an advantage. It's like our home gym. You know, we do our Sun Dome shootout, our Christmas tournament there. So we get to be up there, kind of put that on so the kids are comfortable in that environment. They get to play two games during the Christmas tournament there. And then every year, you know, we have kids that have played 20-plus games in the Sun Dome by the time they graduate. So we tell them it's our home court. And then our crowd supports, our just fan base is awesome. Especially you go up there and win a couple games, get yourself into the semis. It is a sea of orange in there, and we love it.
What tell us a little bit more about the Yakima or the Sun Dome shootout that you guys run over the Christmas break. I know Scorebook Live has supported that event over the last couple of years, and you guys have been an awesome user of the game scoring app. But when I look at the team rosters over the last couple of years, you guys have had the best 1A and 2A schools. And even some of the better, bigger schools across the central part of the state at your event over the last couple of years. Tell us a little bit about this year's event, who's coming, and the excitement around it.
So we get 28 schools, and we do 4 girls teams, so our girls can be in it, and then 24 boys teams. And we try our best to get the best 1A and 2A teams, because that's where our state tournament's at. But we've had, I think our program last year, I think we had 6 of the top 8 2As in there last year, and I think 5 of the top 8 1As in there at the tournament. And last year we had Linden, we played Linden, so it was the 1A champs versus 2A champs. And then Kings Lake Christian was there, who we played in the state title game, and Cedar was there, who Linden played in the state title game. So we had those teams didn't play each other, but it's almost a preseason matchup of what could happen in March.
Yeah, that's such a benefit to be able to have some of the better teams kind of mid-season at an event like that, where you can kind of, you know, imagine, hey, you know what, we're going to look this way in another 6 to 8 weeks when playoffs comes. This team might look that way. What do we need to do to have an upper hand? So the fact that there's great support amongst the 1A and 2As to get to that event is a really unique and awesome thing. I quite frankly, you know, I wish that there were 3A and 4A events in the state that were able to put together something like that. You mentioned the fact that you had some of the state semifinalists and you guys won the state title last year. You guys had a heck of a year. You guys are projected and you're looking forward to having another big year, but you guys lost a big piece in a guard season ago, Antonio Salinas. What did he mean to your program last year? And how has his adjustment been to at the college level at Western Oregon from what you know?
He meant a lot to us. I think what Antonio, more than anything on the basketball, he's a good person. So just as a role model, he was great with our hoop camp, running our kids, always there to like lend a helping hand. But we're just going to miss him as a leader on our courts and practice. You know, just our whole team culture went kind of around him, so we'll miss him there. But I had three good guards last year. I had Brock Ellis, Antonio Salinas, and then Cesar Diaz. So I'm going to miss just that guard speed. But Antonio at college, he's doing well. Little adjustment going from 1A to Division II. It's a big jump, you know, just consistently night in, night out. But he's loving it. He's a team-first guy, so he's doing everything he can to help his team win.
That is always a big jump, regardless of how big a high school or small high school getting to the college level. So we wish him nothing but the best of luck. And in talking about making a jump from one level to another, you know, in my eyes, and I had this conversation with Roger DeBoer at Lennon Christian, there's a misconception about the name by the classification and the level of basketball. How good is the level of basketball at the 2A level in the state of Washington?
I think that at any level, the top is really good, and then towards the bottom it gets less. I think that's at any level. I think you take 4A, take the cream off the top, you're going to have a lot of Division I players out there. Just the more depth and the height, length, they have that. But the 1A, 2A, we can be competitive with a lot of teams at any level, I think. We see it in the summer. You know, I know summer you don't get your best teams out there because guys are off doing different things, but we're competitive in every tournament we go to.
You guys have, you know, some big shoes to replace in that three-man backcourt that you spoke of a second ago. But, you know, the fact of the matter is families move, players coming in and out of districts have to find a new school. You guys have a nice new addition to the program, Mason Landick, who played at Kittitas, then played at Kashmir a season ago. He's a very skilled guard. What do you expect him to bring to the table for you?
I'm expecting just big things out of Mason. I've kind of been grooming him in my TA, so I'm loving getting to know him and seeing the person he is on the court. He is a very competitive, tough player, and I think he's kind of exactly what we needed to put us right back into the title contention. You know, it takes a ton of luck, and just everything has to fall your way to win a state title, but I think he puts us right there in the conversation to be competitive with those top teams.
And many times, as we talked about, smaller schools such as yours, that have a culture of athletic excellence, have multi-sport athletes. You have a sophomore that has really caught your eye, that you think has a really promising future, both on the hardwood but on the football field, and that's sophomore Clayson Delp. What are you looking at for him to bring to your team this year?
I think Clayson could be one of those guys that night in, night out, can go out and guard their best player and also get us 20 on any given night. He is just an absolute stud. He's taken the offseason very serious. I don't know if just for football or basketball, but he's put on about 20 pounds of muscle, and I'm expecting a really big year out of him. Last year he was a freshman, and he played. He didn't start for us, but during crunch time, he is in about every time. It's tough to take a kid like that out, so I'm expecting a big year out of him.
Well, Coach, we're expecting another big year out of Zilla. It's always difficult to defend the title, but in hearing from other coaches across the state, they feel that you guys are up to the challenge, so it's going to be fun to watch you guys. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, and best of luck this season.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having us.